Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told.
Whether facing ruthless men who prey on other mariners or storms that turn calm seas into graveyards, those who go down to the sea and cast off lines enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard the Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Had to Go Out podcast beach rescue series. We thank you guys for joining us. Thanks for listening. Liking, subscribing, sharing, downloading, all that social media stuff that gets the word out. You are listening to a podcast that is now has two series in the top 100 on the Apple Podcast Government Chart. So huge step forward. We're so glad that you guys are into it, and we're really glad for people like our guest today that are helping us share some of these stories to inspire others and give them something positive to listen to.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, everybody. If it's your first time here, know you're going to enjoy it. I know we got a good one in store. Go back and listen to some of our other stuff on our OG, the Had to Go Out podcast. You listen to our Distant Shores with some of our international partners. And we've got some other beach rescues out there as well. Follow us on social media. You name the social media, we're out there. Just type in They Had to Go Out and you'll find us. Go to your browser, type in They Had to Go Out. You can find us there.
For sure. And hey, we got a cool one today. So one of the best ways that I like to get referred to guests is by like word of mouth, because that's where you get the best stories, is from people that know each other. So we've got a friend of a past guest, Jason Cognar with the Ocean City, Maryland Beach Rescue. And who we have today on the line, Mrs. Kelly Keefe, born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland, now living in New Orleans, Louisiana, started out at Ocean City's Beach Rescue in 2009, did a full-on decade there, kind of finished her service there in 2016, 2017, and was a surf rescue technician and has gone on, I think, to be a teacher, and she can talk to that. But Kelly, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me. This is awesome, and super excited to be on here. Did it for about 10 years, and then I definitely wanted to keep coming back every year. So in that awkward time of trying to keep living the dream, decided to be a teacher, teach middle school health and PE. And then right now we're in New Orleans, and I'm currently staying home with my two small kids. So hopefully get back into both beach patrol and teaching in the next couple of years.
Very cool. At least it worked out for us that you are home, so that we get to like record these interviews, because people get busy. So thank you for joining us.
Quarantine's working in our favor for once.
It really is. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Well, hey Kelly, welcome. We're glad to have you. So with all that, what's your most dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories?
Man, after 10 years, you got quite a few, but, you know, I was thinking about it the past couple of days and narrowing it down to a couple, you know, standout ones that really stick with you. I'm sure you guys can attest to that, and you have plenty of people that come on the podcast and they tell their stories and some of the stuff that, you know, you'll remember for the rest of your life. And there's definitely one. It was so I started out as a surf rescue technician, which is like your basic rookie, and then you can move up pretty quickly to become like an assistant crew chief, and then basically a crew chief where you're in charge of anywhere from 8 to 12 people. And it was my first year as a crew chief, and I was so nervous. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. Like, I was in the busiest area for RIPS. I was in crew 6, and Connie was my sergeant, actually, and he was, I had big shoes.
Bill's laughing because,
I mean, I've known that guy for 25 years, and it still boggles my mind that they let he or I be in charge of anything.
Yeah, it's crazy. I had huge shoes to fill because he was the crew chief of Crew 6 before me.
Okay.
So he was like, I want you to do it. I know you can do it. And, you know, he was super encouraging.
Did he get those really big eyes when he was telling you and get real excited?
Yeah. And, you know, it was like a, could have been a 5-minute conversation, but it turned into a 45-minute conversation. You know,
I love that guy.
Yeah. So it was my first year as a crew chief, and it was before hours. So we go every day from 10 to 5:30, and this day we were doing an event. It was the Jeep parade, and I don't know if you guys know about that. The Jeeps, like all kinds of people bring their Jeeps and they drive on the beach. It's like they get to drive like a couple miles, like maybe a mile or two, but they love it. So
it's probably a big deal because you're not normally allowed to there, right?
Like, you're definitely not allowed to drive on the beach. Definitely learned that one time.
I learned that. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, so we did the Jeep parade. It was early. We were there at like 7 in the morning. We did the Jeep parade because they try and get it when there's nobody on the beach, safety reasons, and they have some of the guards come down on the four-wheelers and kind of, you know, keep them in line so they're not getting stuck and doing anything crazy. So we were on the way back, and we had some time to kill, and we were like, hey, let's go to eat, get some breakfast before we go, you know, get ready for the day. And it was me and my other sergeant that day, and we were going to get our stuff, and we got a 911 call, and they said, you know, we got swimmers in distress on 42nd Street. I'm like, 8 o'clock in the morning, like, who's out swimming right now? Like, you know, and it was like, it wasn't that warm. So we were like, all right, let's go. You know, sometimes you get these calls from people on the beach that they think somebody's in trouble and they're not. So
we call those condo commandos.
Exactly. Yeah. Those are the condo commanders. And so we were like, all right, like, let's go check it out. So it was just him and I. We go down on, you know, we're flying on the four-wheeler. I'm like about to fall off. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So we get there and we're on 42nd Street. And I remember pulling up and I saw the rip, you know, it was huge. I'm like, all right. Yeah, there's definitely some people in there, but nobody looked like, you know, life or death. So I was like, I don't know. And Postel, he was with me. He's like, I don't know. I think they're all right. And I was like, I'm going to head out, you know, just in case, like something's not right. I said, I'm going to go out, you know. So he's like, all right, you go ahead. So I'm going out there and I get out there and we're a good 150, 200 yards offshore at this point. And there's like two people out there and there's a lady, she's floating on her back and she's obviously kind of struggling, but not to the point where she's going under. And I'm like, hey, you okay? You need help getting in? She's like, I'm fine. So I'm looking around. I'm like, hey, do you need help? It's this guy. He's like in a t-shirt, treading water. And I'm like, you need help? He's like, I'm like, who needs help here? And he looks down. And at that point, I look down and there's a girl underwater. I saw like the black of her bathing suit top, like floating.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, it was insane. This guy was out there. He was actually out fishing early in the morning, and they were foreign workers. They were out before going to work, went swimming, and they got pulled out in the rip, and the girl couldn't get in, and so he went out in like his full clothes, and he was out there treading water, just holding this girl up for as long as he could until somebody got there. And I'll never forget it. I remember like reaching down, pulling her up, and she was obviously unconscious, and I'm looking on the beach, and I didn't know at the time, but Postel was on the beach and he's on the radio with Ocean City. And he's like, everything's good. Everyone's fine. Like Kelly's out there. Nobody needs help. Like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. And he's just hanging out there. Meanwhile, I'm like pulling in this girl. I cross-chest her in and I'm like, Matt, like, come out. Like, it's bad. And he sees me and he goes, I'm just kidding. I was totally wrong. Send everybody. We're going to go. I'm like, and he's flying out. And at this point, I'm almost, you know, chest to waist deep. And I'm pulling the girl in. He comes and we backpack her in. We run her out to the beach. And we get on the beach. And at that point, you know, EMS and all the medics are there. And, you know, I don't know how, like, she had a pulse. And, like, because she was, like, you talk about like the closest you could be, like she was there because if that man wasn't out there fishing 100%, she would have never made it, which, like, to this day, like, he doesn't know, you know, how big of a role he played in that rescue, but
right,
that was definitely the craziest. And then, you know, all EMS works on her and stuff, and they take her away, and she was breathing on her own when she left. And then after that, you know, unless people reach out, you don't hear from them, which, right, you know, you always wonder, hey, are they okay, or what happened? But we never heard. Oh, we did hear that she was in a medically induced coma, I think, and then she got released and went back home.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. And the other two people who were out there were legit okay. Like, the guy who was helping her made it back in on his own, and
yeah, the lady... yeah. So we made sure, you know, after all this stuff happens, people are showing up as soon as they're hearing it go on. And I want to say Connie showed up, and Connie went over, and he got like a voluntary witness statement from the fisher, and
okay,
talked to him for a while, and was like, you know, you saved that girl's life. And he was just super, you know, humble, nonchalant, like, didn't want to be recognized. He's like,
right,
you know, I was just doing, you know, Good Samaritan kind of thing. And she was out there with two or three of her friends, and they had all gotten in okay, but she was the one that was struggling. And I think the fisherman's wife is who was out there floating on her back. She went out because she was scared her husband was going to go under. So that's when you get in these tricky situations where somebody's in trouble, and then somebody else goes out to help, and then it's like, right, into, you know, three victims instead of one. So it could have been a lot worse.
For sure. And how old was the girl?
She was 18.
Okay.
Yeah, she was 18, and she's down for the summer, working at Food Lion for the summer. They said they were just out going for a swim early in the morning, and, you know, if you don't know the ocean and you're not a very good swimmer or waterman, it's deceiving because you don't know the area and the rips, and it's the panic that sets in. You know, you're still getting pushed out, and you're exhausted. You can't get in. So
actually, that leads me to a question, Kelly, because, like, I mean, I know boats, I know the water. I'm not a surf guy, though. You know, you put me somewhere else, I can tell you where the wind's coming from, what the current's doing. But what, you said, you know, as soon as you got there, you could see the rip current. So what are you looking at that makes you go, okay, there's a rip current right there? Like, what do you see that says, okay, I know that's a rip current? So what can people look for to maybe stay out of them?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's something that we try and, in our mission statement, you know, our number one thing is educate. You know, you try and educate as many people as you can every day, because the population in Ocean City is just constantly changing. People are coming in town, people are leaving. So when you're, you know, we always say, as soon as you get to the beach, go to the lifeguard, ask what the conditions are, stay by the lifeguard, you know. And even if you think you're the best swimmer or the best ocean guy out there, it changes hour by hour in the tides. Right. You guys know that. And so we say to look for a rip. To the naked eye, it's a little bit harder to see. If you have polarized sunglasses on, you can see the discoloration in the water.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're looking at it from the beach, you'll see, you know, water on the top, on the surface, moving back out to sea, and it's kind of swirling around. Sometimes there's some white water. It's a little bit deeper, so it's sometimes a darker color than the other water, you know, because it's a break in the sandbar.
Right.
Or, you know, it's pulling around the jetty or the pier. So it looks a little bit darker, and it just looks different. Like, you kind of look at it and you're like, probably shouldn't go in there, but it looks fun. You know, to people that don't know, you're like, that looks kind of fun. Like,
right.
But that's, you know, where people get in trouble. So,
right. So what should people do? Like, if they get caught in a rip, what's the best thing to do? Not fight it, right? Just kind of ride it out and then try to get sideways.
I mean, yeah,
is that the right answer?
Yep, exactly. So, as hard
that
as you know,
hey, that education piece worked, Kelly. You hear that? Even our pool lifeguard on here got it right.
There we go. Yeah, I'm still doing my job. Yeah, you're exactly right. That's you know, it's easier said than done. We'll tell people right. A million times, hey, just relax, let it take you out to sea. But when you're in that situation, it's terrifying, especially if you're in, you know, some of the bigger rips in Ocean City in the middle south or the middle north. You're in, these rips are sometimes two blocks. Like, it's insane. And that thing's pulling you out. You're, you know, 200-300 yards offshore. You're panicking, especially if you're not super comfortable in the water. But you just kind of relax and, you know, realize this is what's happening. And then, you know, kind of take your time, most of the time you want to try and go with the, you know, with the current. So if it's going, you know, south to north, just kind of go with it, but it might follow. So that's kind of like the tricky situations. Sometimes you got to swim the opposite way. So you got to be, you know, somewhat in shape because you're getting exhausted swimming, you know, horizontal, and then to swim yourself back in to 300 yards. So that's, you know, it's always hard to tell people to, like, relax, but a lot of the guards are very, very aware of where their rips are in the area, so we can kind of keep them clear all day. You know, you don't want to get in a situation where you got a whole crowd of people in a permanent rip. It's just going to lead. You're going to be off your stand all day, and then the whole beach isn't safe. So.
Yeah, and if things would have went south the day that you were talking about, I mean, what, there were one, two, three or four people, like, caught in that one single rip, you know?
Yeah. And that's, like, that's so scary is because that was when we were off duty.
Right.
So we always tell people, like, you know, wait until the lifeguards get here. You know, 10 to 5:30, that's a long time to be out in the sun swimming, but... Yeah. You know, we are the fun police, so people want to come up before.
That's what I was going to say. Everybody wants to be there when the guard. I mean, I remember going to Ocean City in high school, and we went to the beach when the lifeguards weren't there because you could do way dumber stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I get it. You know, people pay a lot of money to come down there on vacation, and they don't want to be told, like, hey, you can't swim right. You know, if you pay a ton of money for a hotel and you go out, and this happened a bunch when I was in Crew 6, is the Hilton was right there, and there was a ginormous rip current every day. So people would come out, and they're like, I don't want to walk a half block that way to get in the water.
Right.
So, but then, you know, one person goes in, somebody else sees that, and then they go in. So it's just, it's constant just educating and preventing so that, you know, the best way to keep everybody safe is for you to be in your stand. If you're out making a rescue, somebody's watching your water, but they're also watching their own water. So it's now turned into four, you know, four blocks and only one set of eyes, which on a busy day is a super scary situation. And, you know, I know, like, Connie had talked about not having, like, any drownings for, you know, a really long time, you know, during his time. And there was a summer that we had two in 2 weeks, and it was, like, the worst. It was the worst thing I've ever been a part of, and I was a part of both of them. So it was like, that's when it kind of hits home. Like, we're not, a, you know, some people make fun of, like, oh, you're just a lifeguard sitting out in the sun. Like, it's one of the most stressful jobs, you know, out there, because you have so many people that you're responsible for. And, you know, a lot of these people, like, they're just kids. They're in high school or college, and they got to live with, you know, seeing some of that stuff. And it can be really, really traumatic for them.
Well, and Kelly, so talking, you know, speaking to that about, you know, they're just a lifeguard and you're enjoying the sun or whatever. Let's talk about, I mean, you just describe rips for everyone. And now your job is to swim into the thing that you're telling everyone to avoid, knowing full well that you're going to be pulled further from shore. What would you say gave you the confidence to say, hey, I'm going to swim out there and I'm going to check all these people? Was it fitness? Was it knowing that guys back on shore had your back? Was it, you know, what was it? What allowed you to do that, to kind of face, you know, whether it's a fear or not, because you're, I mean, you're, it could be an awareness, right? You're aware of how dangerous it is. Maybe you're not scared of it, but there has to be a healthy awareness or fear of a rip current. And when you run out there, what was it that allowed you to do that?
Yeah, for sure. And you throw in, you know, like, a big surf day where there's a hurricane offshore. And I think you get a little bit more, you can think a little bit more when you're just sitting there looking at it. But when it's go time, you know, we're all doing the, you know, any sort of, you know, frontline, military, lifeguards, nurses, everybody's doing the same job. They want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, you're almost addicted to it because you want to be the guy or the girl that's going in where everybody's running out. And there's, like, something to be said about that because there's a lot of people that are doing that. And you know, it sounds bad, but you want to be there when something's going bad because you want to be the person going out. So, I mean, and definitely that morning, we weren't expecting that. So it totally caught you all. You didn't have time to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got there and they were like, oh, I think it seems fine. I don't know if it was, like, just like a female instinct. I'm going to go ahead and say a female instinct. Like, something's not right. Like, I'm going to head out. And meanwhile, right. Costello's like, I think they're fine. Everything's fine. I was like, no, it's definitely not. So, yeah, you just don't have time to think. Once you make that decision, you know, you see somebody that needs help. Everybody, you know, like, just like the fisherman, like, he wasn't just going to stand there and kind of watch her. Like, he went out because it was the right thing to do. And, you know, it's scary because it can get turned into a bad situation. Like I said, the wife went out too, and then it's, you know, 2-3 people instead of one, but
right.
It's hard to tell somebody not to go help somebody when they're in need. So
yeah, that's a great way to put it. I think, I mean,
I think you summed it up. That's a huge question Phil asked, because I think everybody wants to think they're the personal help, but what makes you the person who actually goes? I mean, really, we all go the wrong direction. Right? Like, the right direction is to go away from the dangerous stuff. And we've all chosen jobs where, no, we're going to go towards the dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't even know why, right? She even said, right. Like, you don't even know why. It's just
what we do.
Yeah,
right?
It's just what you do, you know? Like, somebody needs help. I'm going to go.
You're just addicted to it. And you know, and then you get your first rescue under your belt and you're like, that was awesome. Like, I want to do this. And then you're, you know, 10, 20, 30 years in, like, some of these guys, and you like look back and you've saved so many people, and you know, you save these people, and sometimes you don't hear, like I said, you don't hear anything. You don't know if they're okay. Some people don't even say thank you, which that blows my mind, but I don't know if it's more of like an embarrassment in the moment. You know, they're super embarrassed because I pulled out, you know, these 200-300 pound dudes, and they look at me and I think they're just embarrassed because I'm, you know, a small female who just had to go out, and I'll get out to them, and they're like, I'm fine. I'll be like, okay, swim in, let's go. And then I'll sit out there. I'm not going to leave them. I sit out there, and I'm like, all right, we'll swim in together. And I'll just swim next to them, and they're dying. And he's like, all right, I need your help. So it's like, you know, and you have these big, crazy rescues, or, you know, neck backs is what we call them, so spinal injuries, where, you know, somebody's paralyzed or gets flown out, and it's this awful situation. And you get that call, or you get a letter, or you get a note in the mail. Like, I got a note in the mail every Christmas from a wife. And it's just like things like that where you realize you saved someone's dad, you saved someone's grandpa. And it's just not that one person. Like, these people are reaching out every year saying, hey, thanks for everything you did that day. Like, you saved my brother. And you're like, this is why I do this. You know, this is why I do the job. So.
Right.
Yeah, and I'd say, like, we were talking, Bill and I were talking to another guy about, you know, you just mentioned that a lot of people don't say thank you or whatever. There's no follow-up, right? You don't even know the outcome of what really happened. You just know that you got him back to shore, or you got him to that next higher level of care. There's, like, I think there's something to be said for the flow is what they call it. Like, that moment when you're just in the zone and you're, like, everything's going, you know, firing on all cylinders, training's coming up, you're not thinking about anything. You're just doing it. I totally think people just get addicted to that. Like, it's hard to just say, hey, I don't want to feel that anymore, because it does feel good. Yeah.
100%. You know, you get it's like a sickness. You're addicted to it, and you you don't want something bad to happen to somebody, but you want to be the one who's there.
Yeah,
and
but
you
know, damn it. Right. Go off, alarm. Come on. Like, something.
Right.
Yeah, give me something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like I told you guys, like, my husband is a rescue swimmer down here. That's why we're stationed in New Orleans. And he's like, wants to be the guy. He's like, I want the alarm to go off. I'm like, don't say that. You don't want something bad to happen. He's like, I don't, but I want to be the guy that's going on it when it is.
Right.
So, yeah, he's like, every day, like, he's like, I have more rescues. We met through the beach patrol, which is hysterical. Okay. So we met through the beach patrol. And then when we started dating, he was in the Coast Guard, and he was stationed in Chincoteague. And then he was waiting to get his orders to A school. And he went to A school after we got married. And then our first station was here. So it's just funny. Like, that job is definitely a streamline into something, you know, like a rescue swimmer or a firefighter, paramedic. Like, you get addicted. You want to keep helping people.
I think we've all got the same DNA, I think, is what it comes down to, right? Like,
I like how Bill was talking about, like, the adult job of being a teacher, you know, so that you can still go in. And then there's a whole slew of people that just pick that job where we get to be kids all day long. And you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know what I'm going to do when I have to get a grown-up job.
Dude, I'm screwed. Hopefully the podcast works out.
Yeah. Everybody keep listening, please.
Yeah. And that's what's funny, because people would always, like, people that don't really truly fully understand the capacity of the job and the significance of it would be like, they just see us down going to Ocean City every summer, having fun, hanging out, getting tan. They're like, when are you going to grow up? When are you going to stop going to the beach? When are you going to stop lifeguarding? I'm like, you have no idea. Like, you know, the bond that you form with these guys and girls is lifetime. I mean, I married it, you know, I haven't married him. And then I still talk to, you know, my best friends from there were in my wedding. Like, I'm going to their wedding. Like, the family aspect of, you know, our beach patrol, and I'm sure any beach patrol, is like, it's the greater, you know, scheme of things. And that you're like, I just don't think people realize how much we're doing and how much, you know, we're helping people. We're not just out there getting tan. I mean, some days, don't get me wrong.
Well, I mean, your husband's a rescue swimmer, so he's probably like, he's standing in front of the mirror right now, like, perming his hair. Bill and I don't have that problem.
I'm sure his hair looks good, but Phil, you know, he's in an easy chair right now. He has to rest.
Yeah. Exactly. You got to rest. Right? Yeah.
When I told him I was doing this, he goes, you know how those guys feel about rescue swimmers, right? I know. And I think, I don't know if you guys saw him when we were on the camera trying to set it up, like, got his hair cut yesterday, and the barber, because they just opened up down here, the barber's making fun of him. He's like, what do you want to look like, Justin Timberlake?
Oh, that's awesome.
That's awesome. Good. Yeah. Hey, we love rescue swimmers. I couldn't do their job, but we have to make fun of them.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got to make fun of them. Have to.
Yeah.
I tell them all the time. I was like, I could probably do what you guys do. If I could hold my breath for more than 10 seconds.
Right. Yeah, right? Yeah, for sure.
Hey, rescue swimmers are all heroes. And if you don't believe me, just ask them. They'll tell you.
Yes, it's so true.
We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor.
Kelly, you said, what was the other story? You had one more.
Yeah, so there, another one. I was always, since I was teaching, before I started teaching, I was able to be like the first one down there, you know, before Memorial Day, and I was the last one to leave. So the normal season is like Memorial Day, and then people start trailing off and leaving, you know, beginning mid-August, because they got to go back to school. Teachers go back, college, high schools go back. And then there's this like awkward group of like 30 or 40 of us that, you know, in the winter, they go off to Colorado and they do snowboard instructor. You know, there's just odds and ends. So I was one of those like ones that I could stay until the very end, which was in October. And so it was I want to say it was like September 1st. And I'll never forget this day. I was on the four wheeler. I was one of the area supervisors. So I was like, oh, this is so cool. I get to be on the four wheeler all day. Like, this is going to be great. Like, you know, totally like, this is so cool, because all the sergeants had to go back to school.
Right.
So I was in Connie's area. It's funny because he was in the middle north.
Every time you call him Connie, it just makes me laugh. I can't wait to see him again.
Yeah, I was in his area, and I was a middle south, like, so crew six, like the big ribs. And then I was in the north, which they were like, oh, you go to the north to retire because it's all families and, you know, but I was in the middle north that day, and it was like one of those weird days where it was after a hurricane or a storm, and it was sunny, beautiful, like perfect ocean conditions, but the biggest rips I've ever seen in my life. So people were like, this is awesome. Like, it's a great, beautiful day. Like, but it was September 1st. So we had lost about 80% of our patrol.
Mm.
And we have 10 miles of beach, and we had 30 lifeguards. So it was like one lifeguard, and then you could barely see the next person. It's like scary. So you're constantly, you know, getting down, telling people to move closer to the guard. And we're doing our job, you know, on the four wheelers, covering a lot of ground, moving people. And I remember that day was so busy. We had, between the 30 of us, we had 71 rescues.
Wow.
And And like, I think almost every person had a rescue. And I remember I had at least 10 that day.
Wow.
And it was like, it's unbelievable that the 30 of us sent all 71 people home safe that day. And I was either making a rescue or I was on scene, you know, back, like, we always back each other up, you know, anytime somebody's going in. Normally we use semaphore. So we're like one of the only beach patrols now that not every guard, they don't have a radio. So you have to know semaphore. And they was so far apart that everybody had radios that day, so you could hear what was going on. And it was just constant, you know, I'm going in for six, I'm going in for four. And you hear that on the radio, one person going into one of these rifts for six people. And it's, you know, it's terrifying because people are in our pure panic situation where they're, you know, the rifts were moving so fast and they're pulling so hard that day. And this on front of the Princess Royale on 92nd Street is like a, it's a rip that's there every single day. And I will never forget this little girl. I just happened to be coming up and she was getting sucked out so fast. She had to be like 8 years old. And the mom was just standing there screaming, crying because she couldn't even get to her. Like there was not a chance her, the mom would have even been able to get to her in time. And I remember thinking as I was swimming out, I was like, I'm not going to make it. Like, I'm not like this. I'm not going to make it to this little girl. And I like came up and she was right there. And I like, you know, they always teach you like, hold on to the victim's wrist. And like, yeah, that's easier said than done when you're getting rocked by, you know, a whole set that's coming in. And I don't think I've ever grabbed someone so tight. I was like, I cannot let this little girl go. And I like, so there's things like that that stick with you. Like, and now being a parent, I'm like, oh my God, like, right. Like, yeah. My kids in the ocean.
Yeah. I was gonna say, do you even let your kids go to the beach? Or are you just like, no, you will never?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, being the lifeguards and now him being a rescue swimmer, we're like, oh, I think they're gonna like the ocean. Right.
So. Or be terrified of it. One of the two, right?
Yeah. You know, that's fine. If he wants to do some theater or
I'm good with it. That's funny.
I'm good with it. Yeah.
Well, so like after 70 rescues in a single day, what did you debrief at the end of each day as the shift supervisor, or did you guys, you know, how did the end of the day go? Like, did people just kick off and they leave, or did you guys sit there and say, hey, this went right, this went wrong, that kind of thing? Hey, Kelly, your finger.
Move your thumb.
Oh, there you go. You got it.
If there's a day where something, you know, big happens like that, or there's a lot of, you know, big rescues, it's up to the area supervisor or the, you know, one of the leadership roles, the crew chiefs. Most of the time, we have the availability of other staff members that you can get down and you can run down and talk to each person.
Yeah.
So that day, I know I personally went up to every single guard in my area and was like, that was awesome. Like, you know, you guys just sent 71 people home to their families. Like, you know, and they know that, but it's awesome to hear that and acknowledge it and kind of like keep the morale up because those days are tough. You're out there, you're in the sun for 8 hours a day and you're exhausted, you're dehydrated, and you make it a rescue. And then as soon as you get back, you're making another one or you're watching the guy next to you make a rescue. And, like, you're exhausted and then you're expected, you know, go home, hydrate, eat, go to bed, and then you're coming back out and you're doing it again. Yeah. And you know, every day, every hour, you know, something's changing. And that's the thing. It's like, you can never show up to work and be like, today's going to be an easy day. Good luck, right? Yeah, all of a sudden you have somebody collapse on the back of the beach and you're doing CPR. You know, like, you got to be on your toes.
Is that the Marines that say the only easy day was yesterday? Is that a Marine Corps thing?
Well, I think it's a rescue swimmer thing.
It might be.
Yeah.
They have to hydrate, eat, rest, fix their hair, and go back to work the next day.
Yeah, well, not the next day, dude. You got to, I mean, there's a 72-hour gap in these duty periods, true. You know?
Well, they've got interviews to do.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, for sure. That's funny.
Yeah,
Kelly, let's talk about, I'm curious to know, so you know, you said that that period when you had two drownings after not having drownings for a long time, and that it was tough. How did that kind of play out? And then, you know, what did you guys do about it to support each other?
Yeah, so anytime something like that happens, any sort of big event, you know, that the crisis team is available and they, you know, either take the guard off the stand for the day and get them, you know, the counseling and all the city's really, really good about that, whatever kind of support we need. And then our higher ups, you know, our sergeants, lieutenants, everybody's checking in on everyone. And then out, you know, after the day's over, a lot of the guards live together. I know, like, a lot of us live together for many of the years that I was there. So as soon as you get home, you have that support system. Mm-hmm. And it's just easier that you're living with them because you're on the same schedule. You know, you're not living with somebody who's in like the bar or the restaurant business where they're not getting home until late in the morning. You know, all of us were on that same schedule and everybody had their own, you know, story. So you come home and you can kind of debrief, talk with your roommates. And then the city was also very good about having that crisis team available to help. But after,
I love how professional you made that sound because, like, I've done some things in life, and I've been a non-rate living with like three other 19-year-old dudes, and it's funny how, like, looking back on it as maybe an adult now, like it was definitely like therapeutic, right? But at the time, it was just a couple dudes telling ridiculous stories, you know, and like talking smack on their bosses and everybody else. But that it works. You're totally right. I think that's key. Good point.
Yeah, and I think when I first started, there was only about like maybe 15, maybe 20 females on the beach patrol, which is crazy because now, you know, there's 30, 40, which is awesome. So when I first started, I was like, this is awesome. You're just working with a bunch of tan dudes all the time. Like, great. And then you start to realize like how serious the job is. And they quickly were like, oh, like Mama Kells, like you're such a mom. I was like, yeah, because like you just have that instinct. Like you want to protect each other. You want to protect people and you want to protect, you know, families that are on your beach. Just having that like support system within each little crew is definitely like what gets you through those tough times and those, you know, those scary rescues and the ones that have not so great outcomes. You got to lean on each other. And, you know, I'm sure you guys know, like, it's just being able to talk about it. Everybody, you know, in our lines of work and they're kind of like taught, you know, or you feel like you got to suck it up and you got to keep going and not talk about it. And it's important to kind of get it out. And especially when something like that happens, like the two drownings we had were senior week kids back to back.
Oh, like, yeah.
That's tough, you know, and that's like, that hits close to home where a lot of these guards are 18 to 20 some years old. So you know, when I finished out, I was 30 and, you know, a little bit older than them, but still like you're looking and you're like, man, this is someone my age. So it is tough, but talking about it, having that support system definitely is helpful.
For sure. Especially when you finally get that one, like that 30-year-old that comes in and then gives you the more professional perspective on it. And then all of a sudden conversations just sound better. You know, all of a sudden, like we all sound professional now. What happened? Like, yeah. I know how that goes too. Right. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like you get in the house and you're the older one and it's like you start approaching things a little differently. And then all of a sudden the level of conversation just starts upping. I love it.
Yeah, it's definitely like the teacher, you know, like you kind of got to, and that's what you got to teach, like a lot of these, you know, younger guards and rookie guards, you just constantly got to like remind them like, hey, what if that was your little sister? What if that was your cousin? Like, and they're like, okay, that's a good way to think about it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So like be a professional, right? Don't just go out there like a cowboy and act like an idiot. Like do, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's a great way to put it. What, Kelly, so as a female lifeguard, right? I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. Do you just get hit on all day long at the beach? Is that kind of how it goes?
There was definitely some days. It was you get a lot of different – I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Ocean City. You get a lot of different
people. I've made some bad decisions in Ocean City.
Yeah. you get a lot of different people down there. You get a lot of you know, obviously you're not allowed to drink on the beach, but – people are going to sneak
it. Oh, really?
No, yeah. Like, people are going to sneak it, and you get all kinds of drunk people and people just doing dumb stuff, and you constantly have to, like, take a breath, take a step back before you answer, you know, half the population because you're, like, you've done it 27 times already that day, and you're, like, you know, you just kind of got to laugh it off. And there's some days where you're just so frustrated that all you can do is laugh because – there's definitely, and the amount of times that I've gotten, I wouldn't say hit on, but more offensively to me is when I would try to move my stand because you have to move your stand back every day. And that thing's like 250, 300 pounds. I don't know. Like, and you got to move it back and forth every day. And the amount of guys that would come running over, like, let me do that. You can't do that. I'm like, I do it every day.
Yeah.
Three times a day.
Back off. That's good.
Yeah, it's like nonstop. And then they try to help you, and then it turns into this awkward, like, tug of war where it's just not helping, it's hurting.
You're like, it just over. Get out of my way.
Yeah, you have to be like, literally, back up. I got it.
Well, what, so why do you think the Ocean City Beach Patrol, why did the female numbers increase so drastically? I mean, it seems like they, like, times two almost, right?
Yeah, I think, we started really putting out, like, a lot more on, social media and stuff, like, once, you know, I mean, what was around, I don't even know what was around in, like, 2009, like, Facebook and, you know.
MySpace.
MySpace. Yeah. It had a sweet music with it too, right? Like,
yeah. So I think we did a better job at promoting and recruiting. We started a huge recruiting push because we needed those guards. Like I said, a lot of them are teachers or students, and they're going back. And then you get into those, the times where you need the guards the most are the, you know, the fall when there's big surf and there's not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of population, but there's still people in August and September that aren't going back. So we needed more guards, and everybody kind of started to do their part, really contributing to recruiting. So reaching out, and then we got a couple offsite tests at different schools like York College and University of Maryland. So going to those big time schools where we could get our name out there and get some people to sign up to come try out. And like having other females, you know, they see us and they were like, all right, if she can do it, I can do it kind of thing.
Yeah. Which,
that was super encouraging, you know, when I was trying out too.
Did I hear you right? Did you say you do an offsite test at York College?
Yeah, that's York College.
I'm an alumni, just like to throw that out there.
Yeah, that's actually where I tried out. Cause I would have like tried out on the beach, but I decided super last minute. I went to the Ocean City job fair and, one of our sergeants now, Jeff Rabbits, he was like, oh, you look athletic. You should come try out. And I was like, I'm not like a swimmer. Like I played college lacrosse. Like I can run. I was like, I can swim, but I'm not like, I'm not a rescue swimmer. I'm not like a college swimmer. He's like, oh, you're fine. Just, you know, get in the pool a couple times, come show up. So this was like 3 days before. I went to the pool once, and you had to be able to swim 500 in under 10 minutes. And I think I did like a 10:17, and I was like, all right, I got this. I'm going. And I showed up to York, and I remember like, what am I doing here? Like all these guys everywhere, like, you know, Speedos, swim caps. And meanwhile, I'm like, and I remember I did it. I think I got like a 9:49, and I was like, all right. And then the whole day kept going. And I just kept making it through each, you know, event every time. And then I was like, all right, I guess I'm doing that. Like, so that's 10 awesome. Years later.
That's awesome.
Dude, I love like swimming tests because you just never know. It could be like the most fit dude that gets in the pool, and then next to him's me, you know? And like all of a sudden, I just smoked you because my technique's better. I'm not saying I'm that good of a swimmer, but I mean, that happens all the time, man. Like if you have the right technique, you're golden, you know, or even it's just crazy to see like time differences that you would not expect in the pool. And it all comes down to technique.
Yeah. I had to share a lane. I remember I had to share a lane with a kid, and he was like this jack kid. And I was like, oh my God, he's going to smoke me. And I looked over after like the fourth or fifth lap, and he was hanging on the lane.
Yeah, you're like, get out of my way, dude. What are you doing?
They kicked him out.
Oh, they did?
All that muscle was too dense for the water. That's what it was.
Yeah, I got a lot better at swimming through the beach
patrol.
Everybody makes fun of me. They're like, yeah, you're a land animal. Like, because we would do competitions. Like, that was a big thing. Competitions with the other beach patrol. And there's actually a big female lifeguard tournament up in Sandy Hook, New Jersey, and we would go every year. They have all kinds of stuff like running, sprinting, all stuff. I was always strictly land. I was like, I'll do all the sprinting events, but if it's in the water, I'm out.
What tips would you give any female for working out to be able to get on, you know, like Pasho's Ocean City's fitness requirements?
Yeah, that's a good question. I know for me to physically prepare, I obviously didn't do too much for the test. I was just like, all right, I need to get the swimming down. But before that, I had already done like a bunch of strength training and circuit kind of training. But to get ready for Rookie Academy is where I really was like, all right, I need to get myself in some decent, you know, beach running shape and ocean swimming. So, if you can get out to the beach or the ocean, that's, you know, obviously you want to train where you're going to work. But if that's not, accessible, then doing something like a run and a swim, you know, where you're constantly doing, not just like swimming, like for 40 minutes, like doing like, you know, sprints, because you'll have to do, you know, run two or three blocks and then go into the water. So you're sprinting, you're exhausted, out of breath, and then you got to swim out, you know, 100, 200 yards. So any sort of kind of circuit training like that, or strength training where you can constantly get your heart rate up and then get a little bit of recovery. And you, I mean, you got to be in decent shape for that whole time period. You got to be able to last that whole 2 or 3 months that you're working. You know, you got to really put in the work with your strength to be able to move the stand, to be able to pull in, you know, 200-300 pound guys. Like, there was definitely times that I was like, man, like, this guy is huge. Like, how am I going to get him in right now?
And, yeah, like, I don't think the can's going to support you. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Like, I've always, like, I was like, man, these things are big. They're heavy. And I've seen them, like, go under. I'm like, oh.
You're like, dude, I wish everybody could see your face on that one.
Like, swimming and you're not going anywhere. And you're like, hey, can you kick if you can? Just keep kicking. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're never getting in.
That's awesome. Right. That's funny.
Yeah.
Man, I had something. I lost the question I was going to ask you. I totally lost it. Damn it. Oh, well. Mm-mm. Well, Kelly, I would ask you, are you going to get back into it?
I would love to. You know, I was talking one of the guys the other day. He was telling me how he came back, and he's back full time, and he's the crew chief of Crew 6. And I was like, I said to my husband, I was like, so what would it take for me to just take the kids and move to Ocean City? And like, he would love it. He's like, yeah, if you want to do it, I support you. But it would just be super hard right now because our kids are both, you know, under 2. So it would be hard finding somebody to watch them. Because, I mean, you're there all day. Like, yeah, we start at 10, but you got to get there at 9. And then you get off at 5:30. But everybody knows you don't get off the second, you know, like, especially if you're in a supervisor or a leadership role, you're right there until, you know, after 6, and then you're exhausted. Like, right, you're so right tired. Like, I mean, hopefully, depending where we get stationed next, I'm like, we get stationed in, you know, Atlantic City, then
game on. Yeah. Game on.
And it'd be cool. Like, yeah, you know, even if we got somewhere like California or Hawaii, like, to check out another beach patrol and see how they do things. Like, I would love, like, I say to Joe all the time, I was like, man, I miss like doing something like to help people. Like, my job right now is the hardest job ever, being a mom, but you know,
especially with two under 2. Yeah.
Yeah. But you miss that adrenaline rush. Like,
right.
You know, like, there was, my, like, last summer, it was crazy. It was like my last summer leaving. We had, like, the craziest situation where I don't think this has ever happened. When I was there, I was actually off, but I was on my own beach, like, just hanging out, and we had a body wash up, which there was no missing report, there was no missing person, there was no drowning, like, there was nothing. And we just, like, somebody was like, oh, like, I think that's a body. And of course, you know, like, condo commander, we're like, it's a horseshoe crab, like,
right. That's a beach ball.
We're like, it's a horseshoe crab. And then somebody else came up and was like, I think that's like a body. I'm like, all right, maybe somebody should go check it out. Like, maybe it's a dead sea turtle. And the kid next to me, yeah, he went out, and I ran down because I was off duty, and I was like, I'll just go see what's, you know, I'm telling you, it's the instinct. It's the female instinct. I'm going to go see what's going on. And I got down there, and I saw him swim out, and then he stopped. I was like, maybe it's like a dead animal. Like, you know, I don't know. And then he just was standing there. So I was like, what's going on? So I semaphored to him and I said, body. And he said, yes. And I was like, I don't even know what to do. Like, this has never happened. Like, what? Like, there, because then you're going through your head, like, did I miss something? Oh my God. Like, did somebody go under? Like, you know, on our watch? Like, but there was, it was a flat, calm day, no rips. And you're just going through everything. Like, was there a missing person? Like, did something happen? And there was nothing. So, you know, we pulled him in and he'd obviously been deceased for a couple of days. Some of the animal life had gotten to him and it was, you know, awful, awful. And people are crowding, taking pictures and like their kid, like there's things that you can't believe that people are doing. You're like, right. Like, why would you expose your children to this? Like have some respect, you know? So we're trying to cover up. And it was just like one of those things where you're like, I can't believe that happened. So I say to myself, I'm like, I can't believe that happened. And I leave and me and my friend that were, she was there like with us. We're like, all right, like, let's just go meet some people, like kind of, you know, get out, clear our heads. So we're going out to meet some people. And this is at like 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. And we're on Coastal Highway and I'm driving to our friend's house. And I see these two people get hit by a car.
Oh, man.
I'm like, this is, like, I have to leave Ocean City. This is the craziest thing in my life.
Right.
And so we, like, are sat, we're at the red light, and I see this car hit these two, like, middle-aged men, and they're laying lifeless in the middle of the road, and I'm the first responder. I'm like, this is insane. So the paramedics show up, and they're like, didn't we just see you on the beach?
Right, yeah.
I was like, I'm leaving Ocean City. I'm sorry. Like I, you know, I don't know if it's the right place at the wrong time or the right place at the right time. It was one of those days where I was like, I got to go home. Like, I can't be out in public anymore.
That's a tough day.
Yeah. That's and it's like, you know, yeah. And it was like, yeah, you give closure to a family who was, you know, hopefully, looking for, you know, their son or, and then you help two people in the middle of Coastal Highway. Like, but then you never hear anything. Like I know they got, you know, they got flown out and I was like, I hope things worked out well, but it was one of those, the craziest days where you're like, and that's how I ended my beach patrol career.
Yeah. That's wild. What a, that was just a send off. That's what it was. They had to send you off. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Crazy. I like, I think you're just one of those magnet people. Cause you had the, you had 70 rescues in a day and then they let you leave on three deaths in one day or at least three, three major traumas.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They were like, maybe you should take some time off.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Why don't you just move to New Orleans?
And- Don't call us. We'll call you.
Yeah. Hey Kelly, were you guys, are you guys, is Ocean City, U.S. Life Saving Association certified? Are you guys like member, a member organization?
So we, we're USLA. We go under that so that we can compete, as well. I know some of the patrols like, you know, Smith Point up in New York and stuff like that. And some of the Virginia patrols, a lot of them will, pay them to go compete and represent their beach patrol at these regional and national events. And I know Ocean City doesn't. So that was a big thing for us was to fundraise every year because we would have to pay out of pocket to go compete, which a lot of us like doing. Yeah, we like helping people, but a lot of us are just super competitive in nature. A lot of us are either, you know, ex-college athletes or some kids were still, you know, competing in college and you like lifeguarding, but then you also like competing and going and seeing other patrols. And we got to travel, you know, nationals one year was in Daytona Beach. It was in Virginia Beach. Like, so you get to go to these huge regional and national events. And you get to be around all the same kind of the people that like one competing and they like helping people. So
for sure. Yeah, I thought you. I knew you guys were in it because I've seen you post some wins before. So I was curious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Did you ever win one? What's the highest you placed? Yeah, you did.
We did. So we for Ocean City, we were regional champs for the Mid-Atlantic region for a couple years, and then once you get there, there's all different events, and then I was part of the 4x1 soft sand relay, and we were national championships once. So I always tell people, like, you know, I'm a national champion.
They're yeah,
like,
heck what? Yeah, heck yeah, like, yeah, awesome. Yeah, own it, own yeah, it, soft yeah,
sand, for sure.
Soft sand 4x1.
Own it, yeah.
Yeah, so I did that, and then I did, it's called Beach Flags. It's like, I don't know if you guys ever seen it. It's like the little garden hose in the sand. It's like musical chairs almost, where you lay on your stomach, they blow the whistle, and you got to get up and run and got to dive and get the beach flag. So I did that, and I actually went to nationals, and I finished ninth.
Nice. Heck yeah, dude. Yeah, very cool.
I was super, super excited because the girl next to me, I was like, oh, yeah, like, how old are you? And she was like, 17. And at this point, I was 29.
Like, I'm going to own it. Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, right. Like, oh. Well, I'm trying, like, not to pull a hammy. And she's like, she's worried about what she's going to wear to prom.
That's awesome. Well, Kelly, we so much appreciate your time today. We thank you for sharing your story. We thank you for your 10 years of patrolling the beach and out there saving lives. I'd ask you, you got any parting shots for us?
No, this is awesome. Like I was saying to Phil before, this is so cool that you guys are doing this. And I think it's going to just help send a lot of awareness out and then hopefully get us to recruit some more people. I know our beach patrol always is looking for people and needs people. I know their opening weekend is this weekend, Memorial Day Saturday. And then they're doing, with this whole COVID stuff going on, a lot of the pool tests and the tryouts had gotten canceled. So I know that they're going to do some tryouts Sunday, Monday, and I think May 30th. So hopefully this just reaches people and educates people on like the awareness of the ocean and the rips. And, you know, this is just awesome what you guys are doing. You know, we always listen to your Coast Guard stories, and then this beach crossover thing is just—it's super cool to hear, especially when you're old like me and
get
you
out, don't come do on. It anymore.
You're living vicariously through these stories. So,
no, hey, we appreciate it. We thank you guys for listening. We thank you and your husband for what you both done and what you continue to do. And I hope you get back into it. I can't wait to have you back sure. on. Like, yeah, wherever you move to next. And just killing it, you know, wherever it is. So keep in touch. And if there's ever anything we can do for you, Kelly, just reach out and let us know. Thanks for spreading awareness. And thanks for setting an example for all those young ladies out there who want to join the beach patrol or whoever's out there trying to make a difference at sea.
Yeah. Thanks awesome. For your time, Kelly. That was awesome.
Yeah. I'll let you guys know wherever I go next. And you'll get a call when I join a beach patrol or go back to Ocean City and have some more stories.
Perfect.
Sounds solid. Awesome.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks, guys.
Before we end this, we want to give a plug for some people and organizations that we believe in.
When the most is expected, the brave men and women of the U.S. Coast Guard are always ready. The National Coast Guard Museum will engage, educate, and inspire visitors by honoring the courage and skill of our nation's unsung armed service. The museum will explore the Coast Guard's rich history and current impact through interactive exhibits, STEM-based learning experiences, and leadership development programming. Find out how you can join the effort. Become a plank owner today. Visit CoastGuardMuseum.org/out. That's CoastGuardMuseum.org/OUT.
Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up at theyhadtogooout.com or your favorite podcast platform and like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.